the United States is a corporation. Is that true?
What that you've heard over the years is a corporation? I have too. Is there any credence to
Why
it? Absolutely none. It is
do you say
interesting.
that?
I mean, this has been going around for at least 20 years. One thing is people don't understand the nature of a corporation. Some people, for example, say, well, East India Trading Company was a corporation. No, it wasn't. It was a limited partnership, but it had ties with the crown. They had shares in it and all that. So it was treated kind of like today's corporations. But what we call a corporation today, the structure and what they do and everything, wasn't even conceived of as a corporation at the time of the founding of the country, 200 years ago. I guess the place to start in explaining this. This is from Webster's 1828 dictionary. Corporation, noun, a body politic or corporate, formed and authorized by law to act as a single person, a society having the capacity of transacting business as an individual. Corporations are aggregate or sole. Corporations aggregate consist of two or more persons united in a society which is preserved by succession of its members, either forever or till the corporation is dissolved by the power that formed it, by death of all its members, by surrender of its charter or franchises, or by forfeiture. Such corporations are the major mayor and aldermen of cities, the head fellows of a college, the dean of a chapter of a cathedral church, the stockholders of a bank or insurance company, etc. A corporation's sole consists of one person only and his successors as a king or a bishop. Now that's the 1828 definition. If we look in Black's Law Dictionary, let's stick with Webster's for a second. Corporate, an adjective, united in a body or community as a number of individuals who are empowered to transact business as an individual, formed into a body as a corporate assembly or society or a corporate town. Okay, now we go to Black's Law Dictionary, 5th edition. An artificial person or legal entity created by or under the authority of the laws of a state or nation, composed in some rare instances of a single person and his successor, being the incumbents of a particular office, but ordinarily consisting of an association of numerous individuals. Such entity subsists as a body politic under a special denomination, which is regarded in law as having a personality and existence distinct from that of the several members, and which is, by the same authority, vested with the capacity of continuous succession, irrespective of changes in its membership, either in perpetuity or for a limited term of years, and acting as a unit or single individual in matters relating to the common purpose of the association, within the scope of the powers and authorities conferred upon such bodies by law. So, municipal corporation, the town, any town, any group of people that get together for improvements, a town, city, or anything, has by its nature a corporate nature because the members of the town, in a sense, are the members of the association, and the county ordinances would be the rules of the town, and so those within the town have to abide by those rules, and so
But it's still a government.
it's a government, but it has a corporate nature. Now, one of the aspects of a corporate nature too is the ability to sue and be sued. An individual can sue and be sued. That corporate nature now becomes, as Black said, that artificial person becomes a suable entity,
Right, because
unless
it's a legal fiction.
I don't like that term. It's misconstrued. I won't use it. I won't touch it, so I won't agree with you. It's not a legal fiction. It's a legal entity. I don't know where fiction comes in because the corporation's real. Isn't a fiction something that's not real?
Yeah, true. But at the very least, when we're talking about corporations here, it's we're not talking about private businesses, I would assume, necessarily. at least in terms of whether the United States
Or
is at.
private business or a private a small corporation.
I see what you mean.
Okay, now a private business. Sears was limited. Sears was a trust for over a century, and then I think it eventually went corporate. But if you want to get on the stock exchange, you got to be corporate. Wall Street's a gambling house, and so if you want to raise the value of your stocks, not by hard work, but by speculation, like Amazon. And I guess Amazon's having problems now because they're beginning to realize that they cannot ever produce the anticipated wealth of that organization. But a limited partnership, for example, is not a corporation. Subchapter S is a corporation. The corporation is created by the state. What happens is you file with the Secretary of State and you tell it what you're going to do, and you ask the state to bless it, create it. Now you're the owner of it, but it's created by the state. A limited partnership or a trust or just a business or a company is not of that nature. It's created by the people that created it. Limited partnership would probably be the closest, or a partnership would be the closest to a corporation, but it's not created by the government. It's created by a declaration that we're partners in this business. And you can have more than two people in a partnership. You can have, 500. But back to the concept of corporation. Back then, a corporation had a very specific purpose, usually in the public interest, the church, the college, the town. There were other corporations created for works. I'm not sure if the Erie Canal was, but Washington was involved in one, and he received shares for promoting it, and that was I think it was called the Potomac Navigation Corporation, and its purpose was to make the Potomac River navigable. It never succeeded in that, but a toll road, if one person couldn't build it, he might form a corporation to do it, and then the corporation got the revenues out of it, and those that bought into it shared it. But they didn't have the intention of trading stocks then, or selling the stocks. It was an investment, and it paid dividends. So I make an investment, and it pays dividends, and so I keep the dividends coming every year. So I've created a residual off my investment. I can always sell it, but the idea of selling it would only be out of desperation, out of, the way we do it today. But
Well, one of the thing I've noticed,
go ahead.
one of the thing I've noticed that some people, why some people would say that the United States is a corporation is, I think they're misunderstanding, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but I think they're misunderstanding Title 28, United States Code, Section 3002, 15A, where it says United States means a federal corporation. And somehow they interpret that to mean that the United States is a corporation, of course, completely neglecting the fact that there are federal corporations such as National Endowment for the Arts, the Tennessee Valley Authority, and the Peace Corps.
Well, I think you got the cart before the horse there, because that is fairly recent, Title 28, 3002. Let's go back to 1871 first. This is the one, the foundation for the people. There was an organic act of 1871, and everybody says this created the United States Corporation. It starts, the United States acts in that act. Let's see, I don't have the wording in the act in front of me, but basically it defines the extent of the corporation. Now, this is a municipal corporation. The Constitution put the responsibility on Congress over the District of Columbia, the 10-mile square. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 gives them exclusive legislative jurisdiction over that 10-mile square. It separates it from the states, and the idea was you can't have a state have the capital because they would have an undue influence on the government if they had had the ability to have control over the capital. So the 10-mile square between Virginia and Maryland was established as Washington, D.C., and the responsibility for the maintenance of the town was left on Congress, or the town city was left on Congress. And in 1869, I can't remember the guy's name now, but he was an engineer, And he's the one that pushed for incorporating Washington so that it could be treated like a city and remove Congress from the responsibility of having to deal with problems. He had some ideas for improving Washington, D.C., and he finally got Congress to accept the idea of incorporation of Washington, D.C., the 10-mile square, which was enacted in 1871. By 1873, if you look at old descriptions of Washington, say from 1867 to 1873, you'll see in 1867 it was a swamp, there was trash in the streets. If it rained, it was just a bogged down mess. There was no drainage plan for it. People would put up the buildings. That's it. They put up boardwalks so people could walk down the street, because if they went in the street, they could go up to their knees in a pothole. So by 1873, he'd cleaned up Washington and made it a city. He had a drainage plan. They put in culverts, everything they needed to start making the city look presentable. I mean, this is the image of America. So the Act of 1871, sole purpose was to pass on to, like every other town or city had, pass on to them. And initially, it was the governor that ran the city. Later, it was converted to mayor. But he was called a governor because it was a military, I mean, a government operation, not military. And they have governors. So he's the governor of this state of Washington, D.C. But later, it was, like I say, converted to mayor. But it had an elected board and emulated other cities. So all of a sudden, it had the ability of, let's say, self-sufficiency. So the purpose of that act was this. Now, it's nice to say, since it starts out that they're creating I think at the time it was called Federal City too, but what became Washington, D.C., that they take this corporate document and they read what they want into it, and they don't read the whole thing. Because if I had a corporation that operated in Florida only, it would operate in Florida only. It wouldn't apply to Alabama or Georgia or Mississippi, would it? That's a question mark.
No.
Okay, now if I said it's 10 square miles, wasn't the same true that this corporation only operates within this 10 square mile area?
That's what it would seem to me, yeah.
Well, that's it. They set geographic boundaries within that document in the first or second part of it. I don't recall which one. I don't have it in front of me. But people jump to a conclusion that they want to jump to rather than read the document and try and understand what the document says, because it makes very clear what the purpose is. And then, like I say, when I looked into the history, I found out that it went from swamp to a presentable town in 6 years' time. Actually, about 4 years' time from when that engineer started working on it. But he had to go to Congress to get funds to do it at first, because there was no local taxation or anything. But then when they were incorporated, they enacted taxes, and the improvements went on even more rapidly. Now, the other ju the, now these are the two principal justifications. Let's go to Title 28. Now, wait, let's go slowly though, because this might tell us something. Title 28 is titled Judiciary and Judicial Procedures. Well, the judiciary doesn't re create corporations. They might rule on something dealing with the corporation, but they deal with legal proceedings. Part six, Particular Proceedings, Chapter 176, Federal Debt Collection Procedures. Subchapter A, Definitions and General Provisions. So if we get the titles in there, we begin to get a different picture already. It's a
Oh,
judicial
yeah.
act, Title 28. Now, under the general provisions, we have that particular section, 28 U.S. Code, Section 3002, definitions. Definition number 15, United States means A, a federal corporation, B, an agency, department, commission, board, or other entity of the United States, or C, an instrumentality of the United States. So it means, it doesn't say it creates a federal corporation. What's a federal corporation? Wait, back up. What's the state corporation? It would be a corporation enacted under the state, in your case, of the laws of Texas, right?
Yeah.
There would be a state corporation. And there are entities, especially foreign, but other ones that have incorporated under the United States. If their plan is broader than one state, they might go to the United States and seek incorporation there so they can work across state lines. Now, that's changed over time, but because generally another state allow a corporation to come in, some require that they register. There are different things. But anyway, let's go back to the definition. It means a federal corporation, an agency or department, commission, board, or other entity of the United States, an instrumentality of the United States. Okay. Let's say the Internal Revenue Service, an agency of the government, wants to sue you. I have yet to see a lawsuit that said the Internal Revenue Service versus Gary Hunt. It would say the United States versus Gary Hunt. So what this is doing
Oh.
is giving the authority of these three entities, the corporations, the agencies, and the instrumentalities, the authority to bring action or have action taken against them under the banner United States. That's all it is. Definitions
It's
is
almost like
where
a
it's
DBA.
found. Well, it's not a
Sounds almost
DBA.
like a DBA at that point. Okay,
Well,
it's not.
no, it's not. It's not a DBA because that's a singular entity. What it is a definition that can be used in judicial proceedings, and what it does is incorporates them all under the same banner so that you don't know what corporations or what agency or what instrumentality is going after you. But, you know,
Wow.
definitions
Okay.
does not create, and it's in section 3002 is definitions. That's the title. I'm going to go through the titles again so we understand it. Title 28, Judiciary and Judicial Proceedings. Part 6, Particular Proceedings. Chapter 176, Federal Debt Collection Procedures. Subchapter A, Definitions and General Provisions. Section 3002, Definitions. Paragraph 15, that United States means. Now, does that create a corporation, or does it just create a corporation if I kind of twist the words and ignore the intent?
Yeah, that's it seems that that's the latter is what happened.
That is exactly what happened. So now there you've got a
Well,
picture.
I think that there was another claim that, of course, assumes that I think what would be fairly called a myth at this point, the corporate United States myth. There's this kind of related idea about this the so-called straw man, which is also referred to as the all capital letters argument. Which more or less simply says that if on any government documents your legal name is in all caps, that therefore means you are suffering from capitis diminutio or otherwise a loss of status. Basically, you're an indentured serf. I just find that very, very strange and really without much of a basis as far as I understand it.
Well, straw man, you called it legal fiction earlier. Interesting turn of words. If it's fiction, it does not exist, I think. Straw man, I've seen those. You know, I've seen them in some farms in Florida. When I was going through Iowa once, a long time ago, I saw a bunch of them. We call them scarecrows. The idea, though, is it's somebody else acting in another capacity, like you could say, or in some, I guess, legal fiction capacity, and the straw man is equally fictitious. They say that, well, in rem is property, and so they've associated the all capital letters with in rem. And they use capitalization in rem, but it doesn't create a separate entity from that one named. It is the one named, period. That's all there is to it. Now, I think you said you had the Federal Style Manual. Did you find in there that style manual something on capitalization of names?
Yes, actually, it's in Rule 16.1, and it says The general principle involved in the topography of date lines, addresses, and signatures is that they should be set to stand out clearly from the body of the letter or paper that they accompany. This is accomplished by using caps and small caps and italics as set forth below. Other typographic details are designed to ensure uniformity and good appearance.
Okay. Now I'm looking at a criminal complaint for Kevin Lindell Massey and John Frederick Forster that was issued on the 20th of October of this year. Now there are three people named here. There's Forster, Massey, and Varner. Wait, Varner's not listed in the defendants. So as I go through the document, I see that Forster, not John Frederick, but Forster is uppercased. Massey is uppercased. Even the agent involved in the confiscation was uppercased, but Varner is not uppercase. He's upper and lowercase like everybody else. So it makes it easier to go through here and find what applies to Forrester, what applies to Massey, things like that. So it is a style, it's an identification. It does not have a legal significance. Other ones might have the
Right,
whole name, John Frederick Forrester, all in uppercase letters. But
and
interestingly, I'm going back to the first stage, United States of America. Now, they have appended of America to the United States that we read about definition. Understand that they're synonymous, really. United States of America, big U, little N, big S, little T, little O, little F, big A, little M, V, lowercase, Kevin, big K, little E, Lindell, big L, little Y, Massey, big M, little A, John, big O, big J, little O, Frederick, big F, little R, Forster, big F, little O. Oh. And this is a criminal complaint against these guys. I guess these guys really screwed up, or the style manual isn't absolutely necessarily held to on a legal document. Because it is styled United States District Court for the Southern District of Brownsville, Texas. So either that or the guy that signed it is Anthony, upper and lowercase, M. Rutuno, Special Agent ATF 5006, and the judge's signature, they don't give his name, but he signed it with upper and lowercase letters. So I guess there's either no consistency to the allegation that it makes you in rem, or there's no consistency to the style manual, even though, as you said, it's preferred.
Well, it's not even just the style manual. There were two court cases, a 1996 case, United States versus Washington, as well as a 1998 case, which was United States versus French. And both of them, in a little bit slightly different ways, but more or less dealt with the issue of whether the all caps of the name of the defendant meant something bad or whatever. And both judges basically said, no, the contentions are baseless.
Well,
There is no there.
I agree with the judge.
I see no reason to doubt the judge at this point. And then when you combine that with the federal style manual, that seems to kind of put, at least to me, it seems to put that kind of claim to rest as far as the supposed straw man goes.
I'm inclined to agree. The whole straw man fiction is a fiction of straw men.
Of course, the other problem is that another claim presumes that the straw man hypothesis is correct, and this is the idea that your birth certificate is a financial security. In fact, there was a method called accepted for value, or A4V for short, where supposedly if you and a lot of the guys who kind of play around with it, which I think is a good way of putting it, a lot of the guys who play with certain government documents like to scrawl things from like the lower left corner to the upper right corner in different colored inks. And supposedly getting free money from the IRS or the Treasury Department or whatever. But yeah, they claim that this method works into tapping into some super secret bank account that nobody can access unless you follow these ridiculously asinine
Well,
procedures. And just some.
I'm very familiar with they didn't what was it, assigned for value? It's been a long time. What was it? Accepted
Accepted
for value.
for value.
I remember that phrase from the late 80s and early 90s, and I know it was on some of the indictments that some people who accepted for value ended up in prison. So it's a reality. It's a go to jail card if you try and do that. It depends on, whether it reaches the level of criminal or not, but a lot of people have gone to to jail trying to use accepted for value in different forms than you're talking about. They did accepted for value checks and bought trucks in one instance where they went to jail because it was considered fraud. But the whole idea of accepted for value, I don't understand the reason behind it, but people will take Uniform Commercial Code and try and apply it in mysterious ways.
Yeah, that's pretty much the polite way of putting it. But, the federal government did give us something to go on, and it was both from not only the FBI, but probably more importantly, the Treasury Department's Officer of Inspector General. And the OIG basically said that anyone who uses A4V or or another term for it is redemption. Anyone who tries any of this stuff, we consider it fraud, and if we catch you doing it, it's straight into the hole you go, as it were.
And that's the
So
criminal
they pretty much
aspect.
put their foot down.
That's the criminal aspect that I mentioned to those people that went to jail. Basically, their conviction was based upon fraudulent something. So, yeah, go ahead, try it. If you succeed, tell me, and I'll apologize for laughing at the whole idea of the accepted for value. And the straw man too. If you succeed in proving that you're a straw man and what they're trying to do you, they can't do because you're a straw man or a scarecrow or something. If you succeed at that, let me know and I'll write it up and I will apologize. I have no problem with that.
Well, I know also that I know you've mentioned before a lot about like fringe flags or the fringe on the flag.
Yeah, that's a
Remind me,
cute
what was
one.
that about?
That's kind of a cute one. I'll tell you, we had talked about doing this this evening, so I went and found something that I want to read. This is the website is usflag.org and the slash colors.html. And there's something in here that pretty much explains that whole thing. The quote below concerning gold fringe on the flag is from the book, quote, "So proudly we hail the history of the United States flag," end quote, by Smithsonian Institute Press in 1981. It was written by William Furlong and Byron McCandless. From that book, quote, "The placing of a fringe on our flag is optional with the person or organization, and no act of Congress or executive order either prohibits the practice, according to the Institute of Heraldry. Fringe is used on indoor flags only, as a fringe on a flag's outdoor flags would deteriorate rapidly. The fringe on a flag is considered an honorable enrichment only, and its official use by the U.S. Army dates to 1895. A 1925 Attorney General's opinion states the fringe does not appear to be regarded as an integral part of the flag, and its presence cannot be said to constitute an unauthorized addition to the design prescribed by statute. An external fringe is to be distinguished from letters, words, or emblematic designs, like Obama's picture, printed or superimposed upon the body of the flag itself. Under law, such additions might be open to objection as unauthorized, but the same is not necessarily true of the fringe. Now, they said they don't use them outside. However, they have used them ceremoniously in parades for 2 centuries. There are some very old drawings of parades, and the color guard is carrying a fringe flag in them. They still, the color guards in a parade will most often have a fringed United States flag. It's adding glory to it is the idea behind it, I think, because it stands out now. But that's an outdoor flag, but it's not because it's only temporary. It's not put on a flagpole. But if you put it on a flagpole, The fringe has to be a cotton or a softer material. Nowadays they could probably make one that would last, but back then it would be cotton, and it had to be loose enough weave on it so that it would flop around. Otherwise, it's not really a fringe. So it was subject to deterioration, even though that might not be true today. But indoors, probably most of the flags, whether in courtrooms, courthouse, government buildings, or anything, have a fringe. And to me, it's crowning it with glory, so to speak. So I don't buy it, and I think you had something about Title IV on flag, didn't you? That
Yeah, I think this is kind of similar in some ways. This is from Title IV, United States Code, Section 1, which very briefly says, "The flag of the United States shall be 13 horizontal stripes, alternate red and white, and the union of the flag shall be 48 stars, white in a blue field." Now, to keep in mind, it says 48 stars. This was back in 1947, and Section 2. Then mention about how, the more stars to be added, as per each new state to the Union from that point forward. But, the federal government was actually very nice, and they actually included not only that very brief definition, but they also included an actual picture of what the actual real, not this phony one that I've seen certain people try and make a buck off of by titling their books. That this, oh, this is the real Title IV flag. The Title IV flag, simply put, is Old Glory. Just like from the definition I read and the picture, I mean, you'd have to see, actually see it.
Which has changed constantly through our history as states enter the Union.
Yes.
Now you talk
But
about
yeah.
1947. I think it was 1959 when they went to, or it was 1960 they went to the 54 star flag. Even though there was a year between Alaska and Hawaii, they didn't do the interim flag. They waited and did all 50. But I spent, the first my first part of my life, 14 or 15 years of my life, with Old Glory, the 48 star flag, and well, I like it better. I never thought that we should take non-contiguous states in. That's kind of territorial expansion in my mind. And Alaska and Hawaii were both territories, and I think that was a good place for them. Territories can be represented in the Senate, but not in the House. They have their executive, legislative, and judicial branches as well. And the scary part is Puerto Rico is next in line, and I don't like the idea of Puerto
Oh,
Rico
God.
becoming a state of the Union for some reason.
Me neither. But I think the claim that kind of ultimately traces back to the corporate United States myth is this allegation that there are these corporate,
Well,
quote
wait,
unquote,
before we go
corporate
there, I
flags,
think,
whether it's.
wait, let me go. Title IV, I read it in the past too, and Title IV that Sleepy spoke of does have a provision in there for adding stars to the flag. And when they add stars to the flag, then it's just a matter of sorting the placement. For example, the 48-star flag had alternating rows. One was shifted left, or let's see, one was shifted right, if I remember correctly, and one had eight and one had seven to come out with 48, something like that. I don't remember exactly how it was. But the 50, or wait, is it doing that now? Back then it was 48, so it was 6 by 8. That's 48, right? Yeah, back then it was a
I think
rectangle,
so.
and now it's got the offset to get the 50, to get the odd numbers in. So whenever they add a star, they have to figure out the placement that has some degree of symmetricity to it. Okay, now on to the what you're talking
Yeah,
about.
so the claim being is that there are these alleged corporate flags of this alleged corporate United States, and it doesn't matter whether the claim is, oh, the fringe flag is indicative of some so-called Admiralty Maritime UCC jurisdiction that doesn't really make any sense at all, or it's a gross misrepresentation of something that's the Title IV flag, which is actually not the actual Title IV flag, that is Old Glory.
Let's
And so
stick
I
on,
find it very interesting.
yeah, let's stick on flags a little bit longer. I remember about 2 years ago, I think it was, somebody came out and said, "This is the real United States flag," and it had a white field with blue stars.
Oh
Did
yeah, that was
now this is patriot mythology. People were saying this is what it's supposed to be. This is what Congress or the law mandates, and we've got a false flag here. Not the other kind of false flag, but a
Right. It
false
was also
flag
called. It
here.
was also called.
So I did a little research and found out it was from a TV series.
Oh yeah, it was from Jericho, wasn't it?
I think it was Jericho. Now, the interesting thing is one person said it, and then more said it. It probably doubled every day for a while, and it just grew to enormous proportions out of one single lie. One single patriot lie created all these patriot mythology truths. I read it. I believe it. That's all there is to it. And now we have patriot mythology.
And there's also a little bit, a tiny bit of a deeper layer with that because that flag in that fictional TV show was actually representing the Allied States of America, which you find out in the plot, and so spoiler for anybody who wanted to watch, but basically represents the bad guys who launched the nukes that kicked off the TV series, which killed off a bunch of Americans. So it was literally the flag of the enemy rebel government in that fictional TV series. So there's a little bit of a double entendre there, which
Yeah.
kind of makes it all the more worse.
And there's a good demonstration of the problem of patriot mythology is people are prone to accept things without question, and that becomes patriot mythology. And if it, nothing, it just detracts from time from important things, learning real things. It's even worse because quite often, as with the discussion I saw about that flag when I went to look it up, it was creating a heated debate over yes, it was, no, it wasn't.
Yeah, I remember.
So I just, put United States flags and started going through Google Images, and I saw it, and I clicked it, and it pointed me to Jericho. It took me less than 2 minutes to find it.
Yeah,
But
it's fictional too. It's from a TV show.
people would rather argue for a half an hour or an hour than do a little bit of research to see the validity of what they are claiming to be truth.
Yeah, and the worst part is that that particular debate really was worthless because we're not talking about real life at that point.
Right, but I imagine many tens of thousands of patriot hours were wasted in that dialogue in various
Yeah,
locations.
instead, right, instead of doing something more productive like, oh, I don't know, establishing a local committee of safety or among, pick a bunch of other things too. But I think kind of related to this in some way with the whole corporate United States myth is this claim made by some that the administrative agencies are private corporations.
Well,
So, I mean.
this goes back to the 80s as well. Somebody came up with a document, and I was thinking it was from New Jersey or something like that, that somebody had started a corporation, and the names weren't associated with anything in government, but an association called the Internal Revenue Service. That was in New Jersey or something. I think somebody told me recently, now if a corporation expires, somebody else can use the name. Or you can use the same name if you're in a different location. But somebody told me they found incorporation of the Internal Revenue Service of, in all places, Puerto Rico. So if you want to, you can go down and incorporate your business as the Internal Revenue Service. And you can have officers in that corporation. You can call one the president of the Internal Revenue Service, Inc. And now the interesting thing about a corporation, it has to put Inc. on the end of it. And somebody will be the treasurer of the Internal Revenue Service, Inc. Well, that's a hell of a title, isn't it? All these billions of dollars that go to the Internal Revenue Service, and I'm the treasurer of the Internal Revenue Service, Inc. So, yeah, they find a corporation that's Internal Revenue Service, Inc. They don't look up the names of the individuals involved and find out they have nothing to do with government. That might be an accounting agency that deals with the Internal Revenue Service. That'd be interesting, though, because it'd be Internal Revenue Service versus Internal Revenue Service, unless the Internal Revenue Service could use United States or United States of America versus Internal Revenue Service, which would be a hell of a lawsuit.
It
Confuse the hell out of the jury, wouldn't it?
Yeah, who's the
which
plaintiff and who's the
internal
defendant here?
which Internal Revenue Service do we think is the right one here?
Yeah, how about none of the above?
International Monetary Fund is another one that's kind of interesting because it was created by the Bretton Woods Agreement in, I think, 1948, somewhere back then. and maybe it was 42, maybe it was even during the war. But the treasurer of the treasurer of the United States was a permanent head. He was the successor in that organization. I don't think it's a corporation at all, anyway. But the allegation that I've heard from some is this an agency of the UN. But it was 42. It was during the war, Bretton Woods Agreement. Let me do a quick check. But I think it was 1942. Now, the allegation that I've heard is, oh, IMF is an agency of the United Nations. Let's.
Yeah, that doesn't seem to make much sense, especially since the UN has a lot of other, agencies of one kind or another that are under its purview, like WIPO and many others, or UNESCO, or a whole bunch of other things. I mean, IMF is pretty much it's kind of like IMF and World Bank are kind of standalones, as far as I understand it.
Okay, they deliberated in 1944.
Well, it was definitely
World
an
Bank and
outgrowth
some
of
of the
course.
members of it began operations in 95. But wait, the United Nations didn't exist until 1948, so it's kind of hard that the. I guess the agency birthed its parent, the United Nations, instead of the parent birthing the agency.
Oh, that's not confusing at all.
So, simple search. When was Bretton Woods and the International Monetary Fund established? And when was the United Nations created? The children cannot. I do genealogy, and I run across family trees sometimes where the children are actually older than their parents. And I get a kick out of that, and that's what I get a kick out of the IMF as an agency of the United Nations.
Yeah, which one came first? Yeah.
So, done with that one. Okay, go on, Sleepy.
Well, I've heard some people also mention like some of the other administrative agencies, like a lot of the LEOs, like FBI or some of the ones that are not supposed to be operating domestically, like the CIA. Like, they're not really government agencies. They're like these private corporations, and thus corporations are bad, is kind of the claim I've heard.
Well, in 1993, I was staying with some friends in Henderson, Nevada, or no, it wasn't. It was actually Lower Las Vegas. It was part of Las Vegas, and they had some old law books. The man was wasn't a lawyer, but he had legal knowledge and worked in military in JAG. And there's some old books and go back to the creation of the FBI, and it was created as an agency of the United States government. And an agency, very simply, law of agencies creates something, an agency relationship. That relationship, then, to the extent that is authorized by the agreement, that agency speaks on behalf or acts on behalf, works on behalf of the parent, which is the United States of America. And the concept of agency goes back in English history, everywhere. It's very common usage to have an agency. If you're selling your house, you get an agent whose scope is limited by the contract to do within, but speak on your behalf to the extent that they're allowed by the contract. So the idea of agencies is there. Now, I think you probably would have a little more trouble incorporating Federal Bureau of Investigation, though you might not have trouble incorporating FBI by calling it Fred's Business Institute. And the state wouldn't say, oh, you can't use your acronym to incorporate. Why not? But if I said Federal Bureau of Investigation, that you might have a problem. And I don't know if any state, maybe the reason Internal Revenue Service went to Puerto Rico is they're a little dumber down there. But I think that because of some of the people trying to pursue that back in the 80s, most of the states kind of agreed, hey, we're not going to give anybody Internal Revenue Service Corporation. But like I say, FBI, you probably would not get Federal Bureau of Investigation or Central Intelligence Agency or Federal Communications Commission or National Aeronautical and Space Administration. But if you use the acronym, if you had some justification for it, Fred's Business Institute, you could probably incorporate under the acronym of your corporation, but you would be FBI Inc., NASA Inc., CIA Inc., CIA Inc., FCC Inc. But no, they're not, and people want to say that because they're dwelling, they're expounding upon the 1871 Act and the Federal Judiciary Act statute that creates the definition. Those are the two foundations to the whole thing. Everybody builds upon those, falsely builds upon those two sources.
Well, I think something else too is that, you know, a lot of people like to play with grammar when it comes to claiming that corporate United Statesmen. I mean, like one kind of example right offhand is United States with a small U for United States versus the United States where the U is capitalized. So, I mean, does that really carry any really great weight?
Well, there were some petitions filed with England, and they were styled the United Colonies of America. And then in July 4, 1776, there was no body of the United States, so they were the 13 United States with a capital S. Little 13, little United States with a capital S of America. But see, they weren't a government then. They didn't have anything holding them to together except their agreement to oppose the British, kick them out of the country, declare independence. That would leave 13 colonies standing there, or states, because a colony is a state, if it's separated from the mother, which is England. Once they got independence, then they were a standalone government. Otherwise, they were acting under the authority of the charters from England. It was disposing of those charters. But at that point, they had not declared themselves unified any more than in their agreement to cast off British rule. However, let's see, 1871 was it that the Articles of Confederation, 1877 Articles of Confederation, wait, in that one they don't call it the Articles of Confederation of the United States. To all whom these presents shall come, we the undersigned delegates of the states, uppercase S, which is true in the Constitution, too, when they talk about states, because they mean the proper noun. This applies to each and every one of the states. Affixed to our names and greetings. Now, Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union between the states of, now here's lowercase states, because they're going to enumerate them. New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Bay, Rhode Island, and Providence Plantation, Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia. The style of this confederacy shall be, capital T, the, capital United, capital S, states, under lowercase of, capital A, America. So in 1877, under the Articles of the Confederation, which wasn't ratified by all the parties until 1781, but at that point, they said, we are a country now. We are joined together by this Articles of Confederation as the uppercase United States of America.
Okay.
Well, that was simple.
Wow, so that was all the way back in the Articles of Confederation. Okay, so that was...
They
seemed
created
to kind of
a unified government to a degree, to the extent that... And if you go through the Articles of Confederation, back to corporations, what are we allowed to do? Well, almost anything required unanimous consent to change. But here's a set of bylaws. And so they kind of... You could say they created a municipal corporation, a municipal-type corporation called the United States of America, and they were all bound by that, but only for the purposes and only under the conditions laid out in the Articles of Confederation.
Well,
but remember, at the Declaration, they weren't that. They had agreed to work together to get rid of the British, so they were the under the adjective United, rather than the noun United States. They were the adjective United, the noun states.
So that's the difference.
And in Articles of Confederation, they became the noun United States. Proper noun.
Well, something else too, and thank you for clarifying that. I mean, something else too that I found rather interesting regarding grammar and capitalization and all that was, you know, some people claim that there's a huge distinction between saying the Constitution for the United States, etc. versus the Constitution of the United States, et cetera. And this is rather interesting because all anybody needs to do is pick up their handy dandy pocket constitution. And, well, there's really two parts to this that really kind of, I think, begins to kind of clear it up. One is from the preamble, where it says, "We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty," which is what we're trying to do, "to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America." So that's from the preamble. But then if we
Now,
flip over,
if you look at
sorry.
the oath of the president, it will say in Constitution of the United States, and if you look at the preamble to the Bill of Rights, it will say Constitution of the United States, and in publications of the day, at the top, it would say Constitution of the United States, but they never changed Constitution for the United States of America. They never corrected it because it didn't need correcting. Okay, an explanation is in order, isn't it?
I would hope so.
Okay, I'm writing a document, and with this document, I'm going to create something. In the Articles of Confederation, this Confederacy will be styled the United States of America. So I'm creating something with the Constitution. The first step in the implementation of constitutional government is to create a government, right?
Yes.
To ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. The style was there from the Articles of Confederation. They're creating a Constitution for the United States of America. So they're setting forth the purpose in the preamble. Now, the presumption is upon ratification, this will replace the Articles of Confederation as the form of government, at least to those states that ratify it. When we're creating it, we have to say this is for the creation of the United States of America in the new persona under this Constitution. So, presuming ratification, which it has to do because it can't give all legislative powers herein granted unless it's ratified. But it's what they're saying in the preamble is we're creating it for the United States of America. Once ratified, it becomes the government of the United States of America with all its responsibilities, authorities, limitations, and everything. So if the president's going to take an oath, he's not going to do it until it's ratified. Once it's ratified, it is the Constitution of the United States of America. This is the document that constitutes us. So we've got a prior and
Sequence.
subsequent.
So it's a sequence of events then, because in the preamble to the Constitution presumably wasn't ratified yet, but then when the president would be taking his oath of office, the Constitution would be ratified, and therefore we were looking at Constitution of,
Right,
like it
so
says in his oath. And
it's post tense when it's presented, but presuming that it will be ratified and how it has to be treated once ratified has to be a past tense. So it becomes
okay.
Constitution of upon ratification. Prior to ratification is the Constitution for, to create. I submit a charter for a corporation. This is my charter for the corporation, Fred's Business Institute. But it doesn't exist until the Secretary of State says, okay, you're Fred's Business Institute.
Then
Oh,
it's the
no.
Constitution of Fred's Business
Now
Institute, I suppose.
it is the corporate charter of Fred's Business Institute. But it's only for in the presumptive or the post tense state. And it becomes otherwise in the past tense state. And that's proper grammar.
Well, thank you for clearing that up. I kind of figured something was going on there.
So, we've looked at these dealing with the United States corporate United States agencies and all that, and somebody has something to offer that disputes what I've said, I'd love to see it. I could be wrong, and I will apologize if I am, but I've looked at this for over 20 years, nearly 30 years I've looked at it, and I don't find any merit in it. So, if you can learn anything, learn to question a lot of the things you hear in the patriot community. Who could be behind it? Hey, the government would love to see division amongst us. They'd love to see us squander our time arguing frivolities of no consequence. So, what can I say? Pay attention. Don't believe everything you hear. If even if it's something you want to hear, make sure it's true.
Sounds like good sound advice to go by.